You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
A couple weeks ago, you were doing an interview and you talked about how you hope to end the war in Ukraine because it might help you get into heaven. How does this help?
I mean, you know, I'm being a little cute. I don't think there's anything going to get me in heaven.
Okay.
I think I'm not maybe heaven bound. I may be in heaven right now as we fly an Air Force One. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make heaven, but I've made life a lot better for a lot of people.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're tuned into 3CR here with Koshin and Zan, broadcasting on the unceded and sovereign lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nations. That was the only good news story we're going to have for this week. We pledged last time that we were going to have a good news story, and so a statement was made by Trump saying that he's not going to heaven, which is, I guess, actually bad news for all of us that are going to hell, because not sure where this is going to change the direction of things. But in order to deliver that news, I thought I would deliver the audio speech over a song that I made years ago. So I hope you enjoyed that little snippet.
I enjoyed it. I think it really adds something.
It really I mostly made it for Koshin.
Thanks. Yeah, I wonder what it means for someone like him who's, you know, I think he is quite religious in a weird way, in a twisted way. I wonder what it means for him to just finally throw in the towel and say, I'm not making it, I'm not going to get there.
Yeah, and I think more alarmingly, where does that mean you will go?
Yeah, yeah. I hope he's got big plans for the next life.
Yeah, well, he's definitely making way in his current life, which we will be unpacking for this show.
Yep. Very influential person to go from the TV guy to probably the most powerful single individual in the world. Not what you want. You don't like to see it.
And also a bit of an image generator. I think a lot of the topics we wanted to touch on today, maybe a good segue is beginning with Donald Trump making an AI-generated photo of Netanyahu winning the Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh, other way around. Netanyahu making AI.
Oh, my
Trump.
Gosh. Sorry. I noodled it.
I know that they're very similar. You got it. Yeah.
But we must keep them separate.
Yeah. Yeah. They both love AI. I haven't seen anyone really dig into it yet, but there is definitely a deep psychological association between right-wing people and AI-generated images. They love generating things. I've never seen more AI content than right-wing people making it.
Yeah, and it was interesting to see how that image made it across so many different news outlets that it was kind of pointless by the end, whether it was AI generated or not, because the point of getting that message across, whether it was true or not, was successful. Everyone reported on it.
Yeah.
So many people showed the photo.
Yeah.
And it kind of, yeah, it was the fabrication that was as true as it needed to be.
Yeah. I definitely saw more coverage of the fact that he didn't win than the person who did win. I think he basically did. He essentially did get it. I mean, he got all the coverage around the event. Yeah. And he did. I mean, I did see some people online. These aren't credible people. These are just people posting. But I did see people kind of making fun of him for saying or for claiming that the winner, who was Maria Corina Machado, that she called him and basically thanked him and said that the award was for him as well or something. And people were saying, oh, he's such a sore loser. But no, I think that really did happen. I mean, she is a big Trump fan. I think she really did call him after she won and said, this is our award. Like, we're in this together.
Mm. Yeah. And there's been a lot of interesting coverage around her receiving that award and thanking Trump and just tying that back to what Trump and what she thinks of Israel and occupation and how that can be tied to something called a Nobel Peace Prize.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not the most clean-cut award. It's obviously very controversial. Obama, everyone always talks about Obama winning the Nobel Peace Prize and then, you know, not exactly being the peace president. I mean, he kind of pioneered the new age of like clean drone weapons as the primary projection for the U.S. military. He definitely was not a peaceful individual. He definitely didn't bring peace. I think the award in general, I think, is not, I don't know, I don't think we need to be panicking too much that that Trump almost or thought he was going to win it. I think it's the prize itself isn't a great prize to get.
Mm. I think more we need to find a new word that resembles what peace used to mean for us, considering the Nobel Peace Prize doesn't seem like that. The 20-point peace plan doesn't seem like that.
Yeah, yeah. What is peace? I mean, yeah, it's not exactly peace. People are just saying things now. Language is meaningless. We've entered into a terrifying new era.
And so we're actually just going to make whale sounds at you for the next 25 minutes because we figured it would be more soothing than trying to use our words.
Yeah. Whatever we say out loud, just imagine your own meaning for all of our words. That's the message. This is an episode about whatever you want it to be about.
I guess take what meaning you want from this.
Yeah.
Another thing to touch on was all that's been happening in Venezuela, particularly between Trump and his claim of narco-terrorism and several strikes that have been made in international waters, and how that's kind of following or happening at the same time as the Nobel Peace Prize happened and also the embassy's closing. So I thought we'd go through a bit of a run through of what's been happening.
Yeah, the Peace Prize definitely does tie it all together really nicely because Maria Machado is the leading opposition figure in Venezuela who is publicly very supportive of U.S. military intervention in Venezuela to remove the president and install her. She says she has a plan for the first 100 hours after a military intervention by the U.S. to take power. So
I like it specified as 100 hours.
I know. It feels very... That's not joking around. That's a real plan. If you have it down to a 100-hour time frame, you've got notebooks. You've got dot points.
Yeah, I think it's something for... I wonder if that's a strategic left move, is to think just 100 hours at a time.
Just take 100 hours at a time. Yeah. Yeah. She's very right wing, and she also self-describes herself as a centrist, which I think is a big red flag. Anytime you have someone insisting that they're a centrist, you can probably bet that they are very right wing.
Yeah, the word centrist for me really reminds me of when someone says it's apolitical. Or it's not political.
Yeah, definitely. All of her positions just happen to be the correct positions that aren't, they're not controversial, they're not political at all.
Mm.
They're just, that's just the way it is. Just like how, her plan to privatize all the oil in the country, her support for Israeli occupation and genocide, these are all just the natural centrist logical positions.
Mm.
And anyone else is a crazy leftist.
Yeah, and I know Trump has even put out new definitions of what could be called threatening. There was a post the other day around anti-capitalism being a preemptive threat.
Okay.
And just like the list of things that could be taken as being a threat just widened so much that to think of being anti-capitalist as being a threat is wild.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's such an interesting era where the Cold War is just dead and buried, but all of these people in power were so, they were socialized and politicized in that era that they all just keep wanting to talk about the threat of Marxism and the threat of, it's like the Cold War's over, that's done now. You won, congratulations, you can move on to the next thing, but they're just obsessed with it.
Yeah. He called it anti-capitalism as a political pre-crime.
Very cool and interesting.
Great. Interesting wordplay.
Yeah, really exciting things coming.
There's not just crime, there's pre-crime.
Yeah, definitely bodes well. I guess that also ties into, we should talk about this, these strikes that are happening in international waters.
Yes.
The way that criminality is being used, tying together of narco-terrorism as a concept. Once that happened, once narco-terrorism became an acceptable term, it really did usher in a new set of protocols because terrorism, you basically legitimizes any strike on a person without any kind of due process. You can just declare someone and then attack them. And now that you have the narco-terrorism definition, these boats that are just off the waters of Venezuela, there's been five of them so far that have just been, five of them that we know of, that the US has told everyone about, that have been struck because they've been classified as narco-terrorists without any, and they have a process for boarding ships, talking to people.
We have rules.
We have rules, yeah. It's just,
apparently.
And these are their rules. This is the thing, that's what always gets me, is like, you came up with the rules, and now you're not even following them yourself. So yeah, the union of narco and terrorism, and also the idea that this is even it's so obviously kind of fraudulent. And the idea that all of the drugs in America, this country that uses a huge amount of drugs, that they're all coming up through small boats. Small dinghies just kind of like coasting through the sea. The quantity that are getting through, that obviously it's commercial quantities that are coming through. This is not going to stop the flow of drugs into the United States.
And I think there's been a few reports that the amount of drugs that are coming from Venezuela is so small in comparison to other places, which I guess just highlights the way that political messaging can be framed to suit a particular purpose. If there's not any justifiable evidence that there is a large supply of illegal drugs coming from Venezuela to America, and it's not as if there needs to be any evidence given, apparently, then it's just used as an excuse, but it's not, yeah, there's no evidence to back it up.
Mm.
And I think what really makes my skin prickle is hearing Donald Trump, and there was another unfounded fact around how deaths from drugs or something about harming thousands of people in America, which really also ignored, I think, a huge question of prescription pharmaceutical drugs in America and the huge harm to citizens happening from drugs that are very much just controlled domestically and are harming lots of people. And there's no mention of that, and the amount of people that will be harmed by prescription drugs in an opioid crisis versus illicit drugs. Yeah, it feels very one-sided and very incomplete.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's just not even... It's just a pretext for their other motivations, which are U.S. imperial goals in South America, Central America, that they have... The Venezuela has the largest oil reserves in the world, and the U.S. is scrambling for a supply of oil that they can rely on. And this just seems like... They're just kind of saying stuff. They're just kind of waving their hands around saying, oh, it's, you know, it's narco-terrorism. Maduro is the head of, he's the president, but he's also the head of, you know, this elaborate cartel. And it's all just kind of something to put into the articles so they can say this is why they're doing it. But really what they're doing is they're making a move that has long been on the table for the U.S. to just move in and do a regime change in Venezuela and get someone friendly in there so that they can privatize their oil, so that they can get their Chevron and they can get their companies in. And it's terrifying because it seems like this isn't a hypothetical anymore. I mean, they have the Navy off the coast. They are actively attacking ships, these small boats. It just seems like they're waiting for their moment to, you know, to say that it's defensive. They're waiting for something to happen, some kind of small skirmish, so that they can say, Venezuela hit us, now we have to move in. And then, you know, next thing you know, this Nobel Peace Prize winner is the president, which looks good on paper. And yeah, everyone's very happy. And the U.S. has their limitless supply of oil that they'll need for the fact that they're just, yeah, they're not going to tackle climate change. If you're not going to tackle climate change, then yeah, you do need oil. You do need a limitless supply of oil.
Yeah. And then the pretext that there is a real federal concern for people being harmed by drugs, illicit or prescription, can just disappear.
Yeah.
As if it's about concern for citizens and people's well-being.
Yeah. Yeah, as if America, the United States, cares about the health of its citizens at all. It would be interesting if he did just declare, you know, the big opioid companies, if he just declared them as narco-terrorists and just started going crazy. That would be, at least that would be consistent. That would be something to really analyze and sink your teeth into. But yeah, I doubt that that's going to happen.
Yeah, I think there's too much tied up in capitalism and profit.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting, he even mentioned that drug smuggling was now being constituted, what he said, as an armed attack on the US, which is wild to think about the way that what is considered an arm or a weapon is now changing so that it's, an illicit drug trade.
They're almost pretending... Like they're pretending to be China in the century of humiliation. You know, they've lost the opium wars. The British are flooding China with opium. It's like they're speed running the American century of humiliation. They want to induce a century of humiliation. I think they're, you know, who knows? I mean, they might get it. It seems like they're not doing too well there. Yeah. I should say as well, I mean, on the escalation, Trump did have his friend Richard Grenell, who's the special envoy who's negotiating with Venezuela directly, They were, talking about a lot of different things. They were talking about privatizing the oil, apparently. They were making some kind of headway on that. And he took a call from Trump while Trump was in a meeting with his generals, his big, beautiful generals, a week ago. And he told Richard Grenell to cut off all diplomatic ties to stop communicating with Venezuela. So they're no longer communicating with Venezuela. They're no longer negotiating. They've blown up a ship off the coast, again, a fifth ship off the coast. It just seems like they are making the move, and that, you know, there's only a couple of weeks before the next episode, and that might, a couple of weeks, we might be talking about a much darker situation very soon.
And there was also, in terms of diplomatic ties changing following the Nobel Peace Prize as well, the closure of Venezuela's embassy in Canberra and Norway as well. And with that, the closures were apparently stated to be part of strategic reassignation of resources. And I think there will be new embassies opened in Zimbabwe and Burkina Faso.
Very cool. Very cool. Burkina Faso, huge.
Thomas Sankara.
Huge Burkina Faso episode coming. Don't you worry about that.
It's been years in the making. I think one of the first times we wanted to plot a podcast was over Thomas Sankara.
Yeah, lots to say. Lots to say about Thomas Sankara. Lots to say about Ibrahim Traore, the current president of Burkina Faso. We will...
Oh, you had a bit you wanted to
plan.
Begin.
I have a plan for this show, which is that I've not come to a conclusion on Ibrahim Traore, on if he is really Thomas Sankara too, or if he's a bad guy pretending to be Thomas Sankara too. And I promise you, I will figure this out, and I will announce it on the show in a coming episode. We will get to the bottom of this. If Ibrahim Traore is a good guy or a bad guy, is he Thomas Sankara too or not? You'll have to tune in. You'll have to tune in to find out the official ruling. And this is official. Once it's declared,
there's no going backsies.
We've all got to line up and just get behind it.
Yeah, and likewise, I think my part is I found an incredible amount of songs that had been named Thomas Sankara, and my mission is to listen to each and every one of them and find out which one I think hits the best.
What a guy. What a guy. He really did it. But this is not a Tom Sankara app, so we will no more.
But I think what is interesting on the topic of Thomas Sankara is the statement that came with the closure of the embassies and the new openings in Burkina Faso and Zimbabwe was a message around these two places being two sister nations, and I quote, strategic allies in the anti-colonial fight and in the resistance against hegemonic pressures under Maduro. And I think it's interesting to question when Western media outlets are describing things as regimes and dictatorships to question their motivation in describing something as such, just as we've seen Donald Trump describing narco-terrorism.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's, you can really see all of the alignment happening in real time, that there are the lines in the world between these two blocks that are forming are just getting deeper and deeper. Countries are really deciding whether they want to stick with the US or whether they want to move to the, you know, something else. And
the U.S. itself is also changing its ties.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what they are.
The cafeteria room is busy and people are changing seats very quickly.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the U.S. is such a strange... I mean, it's like they're driving the car and then they're mad about where they're going. And it's like, no, you took the big spot. Yeah. World War II ended. You were the big country. You took over the whole world. And now
and you
two
have decision paralysis now.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really inscrutable, impossible to get to the bottom of. There's a long history of the U.S. in the Americas, in Central and Southern America. The Monroe Doctrine was the kind of official declaration that it was sort of the domain of the United States, that Europe and other powers had to stay away. And since then, it's sort of ebbed and flowed a little bit, but it really does seem like we're moving back towards that. I mean, Trump really seemed to be ushering in sort of a 19th century mentality for America, where it's pre-modern. It's kind of just total power, total domination. I mean, fingers crossed, like most of their plans, this also kind of comes apart because they can't get their act together. They're so internally dysfunctional. But if there is one thing that the US is good at, it is attacking weaker countries. So, we'll see what happens. But I'm nervous about it, honestly. Yeah.
I am too, quaking in my boots. I hope that as this progresses, there'll be more coverage on the remaining domestic production of illicit drugs in the United States and what's being done about that. If that is their messaging and they're going to continue around the messaging of narco-terrorism, surely it can't not reflect and look at itself in the mirror.
Yeah.
But again, I'm sure that's not going to be aimed at big pharmaceutical companies. I'm sure that would be...
just criminalizing.
That would be heaven.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Donald Trump's already there.
It would be heaven if they would, yeah. If Donald Trump came out as an anti-capitalist, if he said that, you know. Actually, these aren't individual actors. This is a big structural system. This is actually some kind of political economic structure, some kind of superstructure that we're all underneath and crushed by. Even me, Donald Trump, by participating in the system, I am too a victim of it. Yeah,
and then we can all move to fully automated luxury communism.
Yeah, that would be something. That would be something. Okay, well, that's a little update on Venezuela. Hopefully everyone just learns to get along. Hopefully U.S. imperialism is not real. Maybe it's all just been a dream and maybe everything's going to be okay.
I think in order to raise the mood, I've got a song which I think describes this situation really well. It's by Dub and Son and it's called Politician. It's the Radical Guru remix, and I hope you enjoy it.
See you next time.
Politician, corrupted and sleazy. Politician, politician, people believe me. Politician, politician, they might try to deceive me. Politician, politician, this time it not go easy. This one I'm not joke, no bother take it free, no fun. You have mouth fit out, no bother go on like you dumb. With them bag of folly tricks, see the boy them a come. All over the place from top to bottom. Now when you check it out, it's true election a run. Attack bout stand when them boy fi sit down. Attack bout change, but me no sight none. All the talk them attack, I just they lying.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast, produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.